How would you like to attend a conference and hear Paul Meyer, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, David Menton, Chris Rosebrough, Jonathan Fisk, and Will Wheaton? You're invited to the 2015 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 19th and 20th in Collinsville, Illinois. Registration is $100 per person. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 19th and 20th in Collinsville, Illinois. issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We often hear it that in a lot of ways, Scandinavian countries, Northern Europe, they are moving, at least societally, culturally, in terms of values, and then most especially of policy, when it comes to family, to parents, children, and family life. They are moving at a breakneck speed, and they are far ahead of, say, 21st century America. In that sense, whether you agree with what they're doing or not, it would seem that some of those countries would serve as a warning to the rest of the West. Perhaps they would say a beacon to follow, but maybe a warning to the rest of the West about family policy. Joining us to talk about neo-pagan family policy and demographics, Dr. Alan Carlson. He's president of the Howard Center for Family, Religion, and Society in Rockford, Illinois. He's author of several books, including his latest, The Natural Family, Where It Belongs. And he's also written an article for the latest Touchstone magazine titled As Goes Sweden. Dr. Carlson, welcome back to Issues Etc.
I always enjoy being with you.
Why does Sweden serve as a warning in your mind to the rest of the West when it comes to family policy and its implementation?
Well, progressives around Europe and North America look to Sweden and the Swedish model of family policy as the way to go. What it does is it basically just rejects all traditional forms and motivations for children, including religious motivations. It embraces full gender equality, strictly enforced. It embraces moving mothers into the workforce and keeping them there as long as possible. It rejects the mother at home as a worn out way of life. And it socializes. It pays the social costs of raising children. It covers just about everything from education, including university education, to health care, to dental care, to school meals. The normal Swedish child gets two meals a day at school, and also heavily subsidized daycare. So it's the model for the future that feminists and progressives are happy. The problem is, it doesn't work.
I want to get into it doesn't work in a minute here. Why is it so appealing to feminists and societal progressives?
Well, this allows the feminists to achieve their dream to get rid of all differences between man and woman, between husband and wife, between mother and father. Those words, in fact, are usually not even allowed in Sweden anymore. There's just a parent or a parents. So it gets rid of all sexual roles, gender roles, to use the more contemporary term. That's, of course, what the feminists want. It also moves toward the broader socialist goal. And remember, this is a system built by Sweden's Social Democratic Party, or Democratic Socialists. It moves towards the socialist goal of weakening and, in fact, eliminating the family as a meaningful center of power and authority. Socialism wants nothing standing between the individual and the state. That's its ultimate goal. And the family has always been its major target. And so this was what I called a relatively benign way of achieving the socialist goal, of reducing the family and reducing marriage in particular to insignificance, basically eliminating it as a rival to the state's control over the individual.
Why do you refer to these policies, this entire mindset here that guides, in the case of Sweden, why do you refer to it as neo-pagan?
Well, in the article, I look at the broad sweep of Swedish history. They were, back 1,000 years ago, Swedes were still pagans, including the people from my home province of Småland. They were the most pagan of all. They held on, though, to the old Norse gods, Odin and Thor and Loki and Freya, that group. And Actually, Christian missionaries found the peasants of central Sweden the hardest group to convert. It took centuries to pull it off. They finally did. But they did become Christians and have been Christians really until about 100 years ago, about the time of World War I, the Great War, when the tragedy of that war and the slaughter, even though Sweden was not directly involved in the war, the indirect forces spread into Sweden as well, including a general rejection of the concept of Christendom, of Europe being a Christian continent and Europeans being a Christian people. And that's been consummated today by the European Union, which refused to put any reference to God in its constitution, which has conducted a war on the whole concept of Christian Europe, and which has consciously adopted the Swedish model of family policy, which is post-religious, post-Christian, post-family. And the other thing we find throughout history is that when families are strong, you'll usually find religion is strong at the same time. The opposite is true. When religion is kicked out, when it disappears from the public square, families weaken and shrivel.
Okay, so let's talk about what in particular Sweden has implemented by way of family policy that is, well, many would like to emulate it here in the United States, but as you said, doesn't work, and what you mean by doesn't work.
Well, doesn't work, I use a very strict number here. Is the population able to reproduce itself? That is, does the average woman in a generation have 2.1 children? That's the reproduction level you need to sustain a society over time. Throughout Europe, all nations, with the possible exception of Albania, Muslim Albania, all nations are well below the reproduction rate. People thought for a time 20 years ago that Sweden had solved the riddle through this program I described of heavy subsidized daycare, of a complete system of national health and dental insurance, so that the government pays for it all. Again, of other subsidies of rearing children, that Sweden had managed to solve the problem, that even in a society where gender equality is mandated and where sex education is mandated, where abortion and birth control have been available since the 1930s and 40s, even in a society like that, it has not worked. Their total fertility rate is, again, somewhere between 1.5 and 1.75, although that latter number, the higher number, seems to be driven in recent years, probably for the last 15 years, by relatively high fertility among Islamic refugees. Sweden has taken in hundreds of thousands of Muslim refugees from Bosnia, from the Middle East, and their fertility is quite a bit higher than that of the formerly Christian native-born Swedes.
So you're saying that Islamic fertility through immigration there has actually offset what would be much lower fertility rates otherwise?
That's true. That's true. It would be much lower otherwise.
Then, so we have a society here that it sounds like what you're saying is they have tried every single thing by outsourcing family, children, parents, by completely divorcing parents from children in policy, from marriage and childbearing in policy. They've done all that can be done as a society to say, and we can still perpetuate ourselves despite all of this, and it's failing.
Well, that's a pretty good summary. I can't say it much better. And remember, too, Sweden is the land of cohabitation. A significant majority of the of children born in Sweden are born outside of marriage. In fact, among first births, it's an overwhelming number, closer to 70%. So it's a nation that has deinstitutionalized marriage, eliminated marriage as and family as a meaningful center of any authority at all. Turned the state into the parent, certainly as the breadwinner, and the controlling agent, and it doesn't work. It's never worked, and it never will work, but we're still learning that lesson all over again.
With only a minute here before we take our our break with you. You say that this is, and you alluded to it a little bit earlier in the what you were saying about the socialist engineering here, this has been a forced revolution. How so?
Well, there was no evidence in the 50s, 1950s and 1960s that that Swedish mothers, that young Swedish couples wanted to go this route. This idea had been around and been promoted since the 1930s by social democratic theorists and thinkers, but Sweden actually was doing very well, and young couples were quite happy in the 1950s and 1960s. They were having relatively large families. The average was close to somewhere between 2 and 3 children per family, and some generally large families were still to be found. It came as a result of policymakers and ideologues. Policymakers wanted women to work. They thought Sweden faced a labor shortage. And oddly enough, at that point, they didn't want new immigrants. They thought they'd be better to put the women to work, take them out of their homes. Most Swedish children, as late as 1963, were not in daycare. Only 3 or 4% were in daycare. Most children were being raised by their mothers and fathers, sometimes at home.
Well, let's take a break and I'll let you pick up on the other side of the break the story of kind of the what was and what is now for Sweden, this forced revolution of what our guest, Dr. Allan Carlson, is calling neo-pagan family policy and its resulting demographics. That's our subject on this Thursday afternoon, February the 26th. More with Dr. Allan Carlson of the Howard Center for Family, Religion, and Society right after this.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Whether vacationing in Branson or boating on Table Rock Lake, Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church in Kimberling City, Missouri is your Christ-confessing congregation. Every week, Christ comes to us through the preached word and sacraments, by which we are strengthened and kept in the one true faith. So come to where Christ comes to you. Come to Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church, 103 Kimberling Boulevard in Kimberling City, Missouri. For more, see our website at sothl.com.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about neo-pagan family policies and the resulting demographics. Dr. Allan Carlson, president of the Howard Center for Family, Religion, and Society in Rockford, Illinois, is our guest. Dr. Carlson, when we went to the break, you were in the middle of kind of giving us the story of Sweden as things were. You said that as the mid-60s were dawning and things like that, you didn't have a lot of kids in daycare. You gave us some other examples. Please pick up where you left off.
Well, what happened in the mid-60s then, Sweden was radicalized. Again, the 60s were a tumultuous decade in the United States, but more so in Europe in some ways. The radical wing of Sweden's Socialist Party took control under Olof Palme, and they set out to radically change Sweden. It's been called the era of Red Sweden. And all of these ideas, particularly the ideas involving deconstructing and destroying the family, what was left of the Swedish family, were implemented fully and completely. It was also heavily atheistic in their approach, heavily anti-Christian, both in direct and indirect ways. And they, by the 1976, when the party was finally voted out of office, they had achieved their goals. They had collectivized child care heavily. They had reduced the family to legal insignificance and economic insignificance. And the modern Swedish model was fully in place.
So this was planned?
Oh, very much so. Very much so. A key architect here was actually a woman who was a subject of my doctoral dissertation. Her name was Alva Myrdal. She had been raised in a born around 1900. She'd been raised in a militantly atheist, socialist family, internationalist family, very hostile to religion. She was a prominent writer on family policy questions with her husband Gunnar Myrdal in the 1930s. And then in the Palme government, 68 to 76, she was a member of the cabinet and was in charge not only of control of the churches, of the state churches, the Lutheran, state Lutheran churches, but also put in charge of shaping policy regarding equality. And so this focus on gender and strict gender equality was her main focus, and she achieved just about everything she had set out to achieve.
So let's talk about the one of the issues here, and that is gender equality. You say it's a false solution, and that Sweden is a good proof of that. How would you go about making your case?
Well, first of all, the birth rate has not recovered. But even one of the world's most prominent students or experts, I should say, on population was Joseph Chamie. He directed the director of the population division at the United Nations. So this is a pretty powerful guy and a pretty important guy. And a few years ago, he concluded. He said, it is not at all evident how having men and women participate equally in employment, parenting, and household responsibilities will raise low levels of fertility. On the contrary, the equal participation of men and women in the labor force, childbearing, and housework points precisely in the opposite direction, that is, towards below replacement fertility. That's not a conservative talking. That's the world's leading authority on demography, or at least one of the world's leading authorities. Other figures point to the critical factor is that in relative to population stability, relative to family health, the key variable is not money, it's not equality, it's religion, it's faith. People that have faith, a real faith, a faith that affects their behavior relative to getting married and having children, that is the key variable. When the faith disappears, the children disappear. The marriages disappear. When the faith is strong, marriages appear, children appear in a fairly good number. And that's the variable. That's the key thing. And most secular demographers, most secular economists don't want to admit it, but that's where the data shows time and again.
If that's the case, what does that portend for what you call an increasingly paganized America?
Well, right now things look pretty grim, don't they? Actually, the American marriage rate is at an all-time low. Our fertility rate is at an all-time low. This wasn't true 10 or 15 years ago. We looked like things were getting better, but the economic woes of the early 21st century, combined with an aggressive anti-family philosophy that we find active in the current administration and in the U.S. Supreme Court, have taken a toll. That's the bad news. The good news is that on the margins of American life and of European life, too, there are groups that are growing, and in fact, still growing very strongly. These are groups that still hold to the biblical injunction, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth. And right now, they're seen as, well, they're just people that don't count. They don't matter today. There aren't enough of them. Within a few decades, they, in fact, could become the future. And then again, these are peoples that are faithful to biblical injunctions.
Now, this is, I said, increasingly paganized America, Dr. Carlson, but I would like your thoughts on the fact that a lot of these, even not as official policies, but as kind of a way of thinking about family, universal daycare, small families, in many cases even divorcing fathers, mothers from children, redefining the family, this is being, in some cases, enthusiastically participated in, if not supported vocally by many Christians in America, isn't it?
Well, there are some that are doing it. I don't understand it. It seems to be once you take that step, you've ceased to be what I would call, at least, an authentic Christian in terms of reading either Scripture, both the Genesis accounts of chapters 1 and 2, which lay out pretty clearly where marriage comes from, where family comes from, and Jesus' reaffirmation of the lessons of Genesis in the New Testament, and the letters of Paul, which are quite good on family issues that are pretty clear, pretty straightforward. If you abandon those things, I'm not sure what kind of a Christian you are anymore. So what we do see, like I say, are some religious groups that are faithful these days. Again, somewhere in the margins. One group, well, fastest growing ethnic group in America today, are Amish Germans. There were 5,000 of them in 1900. Today, 350,000. If they continue a growth rate like that, by the end of the 21st century, they'll be somewhere around 30 million. They're repopulating the countryside right before our very eyes, and we hardly even notice it. They just seem sort of quaint and funny people. What they do is they remain faithful to their faith and to their community and to their children, and there are results. Haredi Jews, again, the most rapidly growing Jewish group. They oppose birth control. They're growing in Israel. They're the Haredi, ultra-Orthodox Haredi Jewish children out of the majority among children 5 and below. They are replacing the secular Jews who founded Israel. Salafi Islam, again, a fairly radical form of Islam, not in terms of violence and politics, but in terms of their commitment to Islamic, we'll call it Islamic family values, which are somewhat different from those of Christians. Nonetheless, Islamic values set, including a heavy commitment to children. And even a group, not much, we don't know much about them in the United States, but the Listadian Lutheran community, strong in northern Sweden, northern Finland, and of all places, also found in Canada, a few congregations in the United States, very conservative, very confessional, but they too have held closely to the old Christian teaching and the old Lutheran teaching that birth control is a sin and should be avoided. They have large families. Again, they are growing rapidly. Still a small number, but they're growing. These are the groups to look for, look to in the future. They may represent the future of the human race, and it's one that's much more optimistic than the secular view would have.
Two final questions for you. How would you respond to someone who says, look, the bottom line of this is obviously a declining birth rate. Sweden is being one of those examples. The United States is following, trailing at a distance. But that's not a bad thing because we need fewer of us around here. We'll be fine in the future with fewer people. We can always start reproducing at a better rate if we need to sometime in the future. How would you respond to that?
Any society that accepts a declining population figure, that is, where there's more people that die than are born, is a society that's committing itself and a community that's committed itself to the grave, and it belongs in the grave. It's a focus on death rather than life. Life comes from renewal of human children. Life comes from the growth of families. That's what makes life interesting. I mean, it's what makes the future interesting. It's what makes life worth living for, is that commitment to the next generation and to generations that come. It seems to be the overwhelming pro-life message of Holy Scripture. But it's just common human nature. We look at a child, you see the future, and you're happy. Because there is the future of not only your family or your community or your religious faith, but also your country. I just reject that thinking. To be a Christian in particular is to be pro-life. Be a Christian is to be open, and in fact, yearning for strong families, large families, and a future that will be friendly to family life, and indeed welcoming to children.
Finally, then, coming back to Sweden, you say that the Swedish model stands doubly condemned. First, you say it represents an attempt to engineer a wholly new family system which can only fail in the face of the constants of human nature grounded in the natural family. And second, the Swedish model represents a forced march of all its citizens into modern urban industrialized society, the very problem to be overcome. What do you mean by that with about a minute and a half, Dr. Carlson?
Well, I could write two books on that, but briefly, urban industrial life, one thing it did do was to separate the place most people work from where they live. This is a big issue, but it was as simple as that. Prior to 1800, 95% of human beings lived and worked in the same place. The Industrial Revolution put workplace and home life separate. The exciting thing we're doing right now is that through developments like homeschooling, through the creation of home businesses, and even here the computer and the internet are playing into this, you can start to make a living out of your home again. We are finding ways to reconnect home life and a family life, and that's exciting. There's all kinds of things that are opening up in that way. Home gardens, home businesses, home schools. That, I think, too, is the future of family life that's healthy and, indeed, representing a new, almost a post-industrial type of society, but in the best sense of that word.
Dr. Alan Carlson is president of the Howard Center for Family, Religion, and Society in Rockford, Illinois. He's author of several books, including his latest, The Natural Family, Where It Belongs. And he's also written an article for the latest Touchstone magazine titled As Goes Sweden. You'll find a link to the Howard Center at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Carlson, thank you very much for your time.
I always enjoy being with you folks. Take care.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer, our regular series with him that we do every week on this Thursday afternoon, February the 26th, Christ in the Old Testament will be in Genesis chapter 17, which, if I'm not mistaken, is God's covenant of circumcision with Abraham. Stay tuned.
Do you have a student finishing up eighth grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
You can sing and recite the church's hymn book, The Psalms, using modern English and more contemporary musical settings in the new Concordia Psalter. Check it out at issuesetc.org. Or you can purchase the Concordia Psalter by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Make the Concordia Psalter part of your devotional life this year. 1-800-325-3040, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, the new Concordia Psalter.
Talk radio for the Christian worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the traditional Lutheran preaching, liturgy, and hymnody continue to deliver Christ crucified for sinners today. The Reformation attempted to return the church's focus on what we do for God back to a focus on what God does for us, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures. Some things never change. The gospel is still under attack from inside and outside the church. To see how Lutheran doctrine and practice preserve the gospel, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Listen to chapel services live weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana at issuesetc.org. Morning chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live weekday mornings, 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.